I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Some weeks ago, Shelley Frelick from the Vancouver Sun was in to talk about the book she edited commemorating the Sun's 100th anniversary. A name that comes up in that book a lot is Bruce Hutchinson. He was he was editor of the Sun beginning in 1963, and it was associated with the paper until his death 20 years ago in 1992 at the age of 91. I had the idea after my chat with Shelley to do a show on Hutchinson and who he was. In the world of politics and journalism, it's easy to forget formative and important figures. New generations might not know who some of the greats were. So when you have a forum like this, you can take the time to look back. And there's no one better to look back with now than Vaughn Palmer. In fact, it's Vaughn's occasional programs on Shaw, the retrospectives he does on Voice of BC, like the one recently with Ted Hughes, that I particularly enjoy. In 1973, nearly 40 years ago, Vaughn Palmer began his career at the Vancouver Sun. He was the paper's rock critic, and then a decade or so later moved on to Victoria, where he succeeded another legend, Marjorie Nichols, as a columnist covering the legislature. Vaughn and Hutchinson became good friends. I'll ask Mr. Palmer now what it was like knowing Hutchinson, what his impact was on the country as well as himself. Other than being the Sun's editor in all those years, Bruce Hutchinson was an author writing some of the landmark books in Canadian nonfiction, The Unknown Country, The Fraser, and The Incredible Canadian. These three are seminal works, and in their times were big bestsellers. The highest award that can be given to a journalist in British Columbia, the Lifetime Achievement Award given by the Jack Webster Foundation, is named after him. And incidentally, Vaughn Palmer received it in 2006. Hutchinson was once described as the conscience of the nation. His impact on Canadian political affairs will be something we'll discuss in the next few minutes we have with the Vancouver Sun's Vaughn Palmer. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program in Victoria, Vaughn Palmer. Mr. Palmer, good morning.
Good morning, Joseph.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, I appreciate being on to talk about Bruce. It's always a great pleasure to talk about him. He's certainly the greatest Canadian I've ever known.
Yeah. Now, there's a difference in age. I mean, he was 50 years older than you were.
Yes.
But you guys got along. You became good friends. When did you first meet him?
Well, we did become good friends when I went to work for the editorial board of the Sun in 1983, as kind of a warm up for coming to Victoria in '84 to write the political column. Basically, they said, you really should go and talk to Mr. Hutch, as he was known in the editorial pages. So I went over and visited him at his house in the country in Saanich, and sort of sat down and talked to him for the first time, and it was like an interview in a way. Bruce, very formal, wearing a jacket and tie and everything, and when I started the column for the paper in '84, we set up that I would come and see him every couple of weeks. And as I said, the first few weeks, it was very, very formal. And then one day I arrived and opened the door of his house, and his housekeeper was there, and she said, he's in the kitchen. And so I skipped the living room where we'd done the formal thing, went into the kitchen, and there's Bruce in his lumberjack shirt, which, because he'd been out chopping wood and tending his garden, which he did every day, and sat down, and from then on it was very informal, and two friends sitting talking across the table about life, politics, family, everything. He's a great philosopher, along with being a great journalist, a great historian, and a great Canadian.
So when you'd be at the house, and you'd talk about, I guess, current affairs and journalism and the sort, well, was there something that you learned right away that you hadn't learned before meeting him?
Yeah, almost the very first thing he said to me when I started the political beat was, it's a small world in and around politics, and everyone has a reputation. Everyone in the parliament buildings has a reputation, from the janitor to the premier. And sometimes the janitor has a better reputation than the premier. So does everybody in the media. So, you know, think about that. Think about how you convey yourself, how you deal with people, what kind of working relationships you have with people. Because if you're going to do the job for a while, it's going to matter.
Yeah.
So that was, I mean, I've had other mentors and other people give me good advice as well, but That one was a reminder of, as I say, politics is a fairly small world. I mean, the people that are inside it. And, you know, Bruce, of course, had one of the greatest reputations in the country's history.
Yeah, we'll talk about sort of the impact that he had and sort of the influence that he had. Do you have an idea about why he liked you?
Well, we used to just sit and talk, you know, and I mean, he once said to me that, you know, the arc of your life is that, I mean, this is a man who lived and worked until he was 91 years old. He wrote his last column for the paper about 2 weeks before he died. And this is a man who was struck down with pneumonia in 1989 when he was 88 years old, and he wired the paper to say he still intended to meet his deadline. He was in Ottawa, and he did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he worked his whole life. And he said, you know, the arc of your life, your private life, is that, you know, eventually you know mostly widows because women live longer than men. And then you don't really have any contemporaries if you live into your 90s. So, I mean, I think he was delighted that we both were able to get together and talk. Bruce was not... People would meet with Bruce. You'd take people to see Bruce. They'd come to British Columbia to see him. I mean, senior politicians and journalists from across the country. And I think they were always struck by how much he was interested in the here and now. I mean, yes, if you ask him a question, you'd hear a story about Mackenzie King or R.B. Bennett or someone like that. But what he was mostly interested in was who was Prime Minister now and what problems Brian Mulroney was dealing with, what John Chrétien was going to do if he became Prime Minister, what John Turner was like as a Prime Minister, the current Premier then of British Columbia, whether it was Bill Vanderzam or Bill Bennett, he was very, very interested in the here and now. And I think that's one of the things that kept him vital and so interesting to know right up to the time of his death.
In Roy McGregor's book, the I guess it's called Canadians,
yes.
He opens the book talking about Hutchison and I guess the unknown country inspired McGregor's own book. And he talks about this visit that he made in Victoria in 1991. You were there, and Jamie Lamb. The four of you go to lunch at the Union Club. And he talks about how Hutchison was really down about Canada at the time. I mean, Meech Lake, I guess, had just failed. Sort of the Constitution was something that people were talking about then, and I guess separatism in Quebec was quite high. What were his views? How did he view Canada, and especially at the end of his life there? He was pretty down on it?
He said, you know, pessimism was the old man's disease, and he always resisted it. But Bruce, in one of the very first prime ministers he'd ever interviewed, had been R.B. Bennett. And this is in the 1930s, and Bennett had said to him, young man, you will live to see Canada split along the line of the Ottawa River. People nowadays may not realize that the country was haunted by that spectacle of separatism for years and years and years, and most of our prime ministers have struggled to avoid the showdown. They had the conscription crises. They had the constitutional crises. They had the rise of actual terrorism in Quebec and of separatism and referendums. And so Bruce, for much of his working life, that was one of the biggest stories in the country and one you'd wrestled with, along with Canada's relationship with the United States. And when Meech Lake fell apart the last year of Bruce's life, he was pessimistic that the country would survive having rejected Quebec as he saw it. And he wasn't alone in that concern, but certainly I think that's where some of his pessimism came from. in general, I mean, he regarded Canadians as the luckiest people on earth. He thought this was the greatest country on earth. He thought we had built something worth preserving. His view that the fact that we'd built this working relationship between English and French was a magnificent achievement, particularly when you looked around the world and saw how nations that had a colonialism legacy and two or even more founding peoples had fared and split and had civil wars and so forth, he thought we'd done a pretty good job and he hoped we would survive.
What do you think he'd think of the Canada today? I mean,
I think first of all he'd be delighted that we have survived and that we flourished. When Bruce died in September of 1992, there was a lot of talk about Canada being Argentina North too, about us having squandered the great legacy of our forefathers and foremothers, that we had somehow built an economy that was headed for ruin. The Canadian dollar was way low. Trade was stagnant. The country had serious, serious economic problems, serious debt problems. I think he'd be delighted to see that we, are now the poster child internationally for the banking system, for a relatively robust economy. Nobody pretends we don't have any problems, but I think Bruce would be very pleasantly surprised to see, and happy to see how well we've done.
Now, a couple of years ago, Oxford Press reissued some of his books, and you did the introductions, right?
Yeah. Yes, I'm delighted that Oxford Canada has put five of Bruce's 14 books out again, and they're available in paperback. I did introductions for them. Time passes and people forget, but if a Canadian who grew up in the 40s and 50s and 60s in particular would have been aware of Bruce Hutcheson, his books were, even before we had Canadiana sections in the bookstore, Bruce's books were the bestsellers. Writers like Pierre Burton and that regarded Bruce as an inspiration because he was the first guy in their minds that had written Canadian history in a way that was really fascinating. I mean, he had a beautiful writing style, and he was a great storyteller, and his books about the country were, his first one, The Unknown Country. I tell Canadian authors this today. Bruce's first book went through 14 printings.
Wow.
That doesn't really happen that much in this country anymore, especially not for a book that was just about Canada. I mean, it was a kind of an introduction to Canadians that was commissioned actually by an American book publisher, and they ended up being a bestseller in this country.
Yeah. Is that the book that we should start with if we haven't read anything by Hutcheson?
I think the book that I would start with today as a British Columbian is The Fraser. Because it's a lovely history of British Columbia built around the history of the river. And it'll tell you an awful lot about the history of our province. The other book that I recommend to people highly is The Incredible Canadian, which is his book about Mackenzie King. Because the great thing about Bruce's book about Mackenzie King is it explains how King was our longest-serving prime minister. It explains how a not very appealing person who was more than a bit weird, as we all know.
Right.
You tend to focus on the weirdness with King.
Yeah, yeah.
You miss how difficult a country this is to govern, what it takes to be prime minister. He does not come across as an appealing, likable person, but you do begin to understand what it takes to be prime minister of this country. And in that sense, I think it's Bruce's still greatest and most vital book, because at the time, of course, it was news what Bruce had put together. At the time, he was breaking news in the book in some detail about what King was really like and what he'd actually done. Today, you just get a sense from a very great writer of, as I say, just how difficult it is to be Prime Minister of Canada.
And some of these books are 65 years old or more. They still stand up, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I mean, Oxford, we had a little discussion at Oxford about some of the language and some of the stereotyping in the books. I mean, they're products of their time. And Oxford put a little note at the front of them about, you know, you may run into some jarring stereotypes of French Canadians or Dukabors or Icelanders and so forth.
Or natives.
Yeah, and it's true. It's there. And what are you going to say? Except you understand this was the times, and Bruce was a man of his times. But having said that, you know, as I say, the three books that he won the Governor General's Award for Nonfiction are in the series. His book about the Canada-U.S. relationship, Struggle for the Border, is out, mm-hmm. And his book about British Columbia, The Fraser.
Now, you edited another collection of his work, To Canada with Love and Some Misgivings. I've been reading that this week. So from the perspective of someone who's read a lot of him in the course of say, putting that book together, you get a sense of what a great writer he is. It's just beautiful prose in some places.
And phenomenally fast.
Yeah, so I'm wondering what his process was for it.
You know, I mean, I write a political column, and it's 4 hours of wrestling with a typewriter or a word processor now. Bruce never moved to computers. He worked on typewriters and typed on copy paper to the end. But he is a phenomenally fast writer. Members of the press gallery from his era talk about, you know, Bruce going around the hallways and talking to people and talking to people and talking to people, and then he would sit down and produce a column in 30 minutes and 35 minutes. He was writing columns, editorials, short stories for magazines, essays, and books, and at one point also drawing cartoons all at the same time.
Wow. Yeah, he also wrote novels too, did he?
Yes, he wrote one novel. it's never been, it's very hard to find, it's never been put out in paperback. Other than that, if you can find it, it's out there somewhere, but it's hard to find. He did write a book toward, I'm not sure when, I think in the 1980s is my recollection, called Uncle Percy's Wonderful Town, and it's a cycle of short stories about a small town in British Columbia that's quite charming. And it was, I think, shortlisted for the Leacock Prize for humor, because it's quite funny, too. So he did do that, but, you know, much of what he wrote. One book, too, that people can find, which I highly recommend, is called A Life in the Country. So Bruce wrote that toward the end. I mean, Bruce was famous for gardening as well, and for chopping wood,
right. And
for his great love of nature. And A Life in the Country is this beautiful little book about how he lived his whole life on a little piece of agricultural land out in Saanich, which is now surrounded, of course, by Victoria, but which was deserted at the time. And then he had what he called the camp, a little place up on Shawnigan Lake that you actually walked into. You parked your car in a parking lot and walked through a swamp in the forest to get to. So it was nicely isolated. When Bruce died, he was cremated, and his ashes are scattered through the swamp now, so that's where he is still today.
Yeah, no, he's his son's still alive, right?
Bruce's son was a judge of the BC Supreme Court, Robert, and his son is still alive. Bruce sadly outlived his daughter. He has grandchildren and great-grandchildren here in Victoria. I still see his son, usually meet him for lunch a couple of times a year. And Bruce's grandson, Jim, who's a lawyer living here in the capital, and Jim for a long time lived in Bruce's old family home, although he has now moved out into his own place.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the influence that he had on public policy in this country, I mean, I used to remember a Fotheringham column from years ago where he'd talk about Hutchison and say that he would write speeches for certain politicians and then end up covering them. Is that true?
I don't think that actually happened. Bruce did see some speeches. I think he may have been involved in sort of advising in some cases. I think that characterization is overstated. There's a book done, and I wish I could remember the title, but there's a book done by a somebody at the journalism school, public policy school at the University of Calgary, that looked at Bruce's generation of reporters and about their relationship with the government. And this person who did the book had access to a lot of the private papers on both sides. And what he found was that the relationship was a lot closer. Bruce and two or three of the other journalists of the era got access to the politicians, and particularly to deputy ministers, at a level that journalists today could only envy. They were briefed, they were given a lot of confidences, they didn't disclose their sources publicly, they didn't even disclose to some extent that they were doing that. But when you read their coverage, this guy who wrote the book concluded, when you read their coverage, you got an understanding of what the government was doing and why. He concluded it was worth it. He concluded that the reader got a lot of insight about what was going on in the government and why. What the reader didn't know, and this is a matter of record, is just where the information was coming from and how in-depth it was. So the times have changed. I don't think any journalists anywhere, certainly in this country and not in the United States either, get that level of access anymore. Of course, print isn't what it used to be either. So I think times have changed. I haven't looked at the coverage in the kind of detail that that book that I referred you to from the University of Calgary did, but as I said, if it kind of concluded that for the Times, readers learned an awful lot from reading their coverage.
But he would advise. Would he advise? I mean, when he would talk to prime ministers, say, would he give them advice? And
I guess because he was in the opinion business, and he's a newspaper editor most of the time, right? I mean, he was writing columns. He won national newspaper awards for his editorials. I've seen him in the presence of senior people in government, including one person who did become prime minister, although they weren't prime minister at the time we sat down for lunch. And, Bruce, 90 years old, said, you folks there in Ottawa are in the middle of a constitutional crisis, and you've excluded the leader of the opposition from what's going on, and you really are going to have to include him, because you can't exclude the leader of the opposition on this issue. And the person on the other side of the table, I think, was taken aback to have that heard, to have someone, a reporter, a journalist, say that to him, but Bruce was right. Bruce was right. And Bruce, as you know from reading the Roy McGregor book, didn't hesitate to express his mind.
Right.
He, as I said, he was a national institution by then, and he was a member of the Privy Council when he died, the Right Honorable Bruce Acheson. But, people wanted to see him because they wanted to have the wisdom. They were taken aback if they didn't know him, if they hadn't seen him before, by just how here and now he was, by just how current he was on things, and how willing he was to speak his mind. You were not, as I said, going to get a friendly little anecdote about Mackenzie King. You were going to be asked how you were managing the current constitutional crisis.
Would you get gossip from the past, though? You mentioned that he interviewed prime ministers going all the way back to Bennett. Would he ever give you sort of tidbits of gossip about Mackenzie King or others?
Well, I don't think there's much improving on his I excerpted it in the book of his portrait of going to Mackenzie King's house after King had been to Europe to visit the leaders in the 1930s, and King had met Hitler, and concluded that Hitler was a simple peasant who had no interest in ruling the world. And so, the Prime Minister completely misjudged Hitler. Not the only leader of the times, But if you wonder why Canada is so ill-prepared for the Second World War, it's right there. Bruce was Bruce did not have today's media interest in personal gossip. I mean, you read his portrait of King, and yes, the portrait of King's mother is there, and King is sitting under her. But Bruce thought that the really important thing about King wasn't his weirdness, which was certainly on display, but the judgments he made and the misjudgments, the way he walked the tightrope between left and right, the way he managed parliaments as a minority prime minister, the way he outmaneuvered his opponents in and out of his party, the way he managed the relationship with Quebec, the way he managed the crisis in the Second World War over conscription. As I said, I mean, he was mostly concerned with things that we would regard as substance, less concerned with the personal gossip and the trivial stuff on the side.
So in all the years that he edited The Sun, did he live in Victoria while he was doing it?
Bruce edited the Winnipeg Free Press while living in Victoria.
Is that right? Really? Wow.
He never really left. Bruce lived, as I said, in his house in Saanich, which he bought the property in the 1920s, and then the place up at the lake. And Bruce edited successive newspapers from there. He was the editor of the Winnipeg Free Press. He used to go to Winnipeg on occasion and advise there. But he worked that by telephone. He would go to Ottawa for the annual sittings of Parliament. He'd take the train, talk to everyone on the train all the way there, take a house or an apartment in Ottawa for the session, and come back. He would go to Washington, D.C. every year to see all of his friends and associates down there. But he never, ever lived permanently anywhere other than Victoria from the time he was about 10 years old and in the school class of Emily Carr's sister.
Wow. Now, are there people in this country today who are like him? I mean, you're a pretty good writer yourself, but I mean, it's a different sort of writing and it's a different sort of career.
Yeah, it's totally different. I mean, you can certainly talk about other Canadians in media who've had enormous influence. I had an interesting experience doing the introduction for The Unknown Country. My daughter's a university student, and a good writer herself. So I sent my introduction to her of The Unknown Country just for read and edit.
Yeah.
And what I had said in the introduction was, you know, Bruce in his time, I quoted Pierre Burton's line about Bruce Hutcheson. He said he was the man who taught me the Canadian past could be interesting, right? I get a note back from my daughter saying, "Who's Pierre Burton?" And, I mean, times change, right?
Yeah.
I tell people that one of Peter Zosky's best interviews was with Bruce, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, who's Peter Zosky, right? Things change, right? Bruce wrote 100 articles for Maclean's magazine, right? When Maclean's, I remember a little while ago, Maclean's did a piece on great Canadian writers. I'm not sure Bruce was even on the list, right? Because
wow.
Where is our institutional memory today? And where is the Canadian writer who has Pierre Burton's influence, right? I mean, Farley Mowat's influence. Peter Newman, when every Christmas tree in the country had one of Newman's books under it.
Yeah.
But today, you know, there are other people in media that are famous, other Canadians who exercise an awful lot of influence and thought. And not just in Canada, but around the world. So, I think we'd probably say there are people who have an awful lot of influence in the way he did, but they may not. They're certainly not writing for daily newspapers.
Yeah, that's. I think you said it on the Ted Hughes program that you did on Voice of BC that this is our history, And we should remember it or else we'll forget it. And it's important to do things like what we've just done in terms of talking about Bruce Hutcheson and his impact and sort of remember him. So I really appreciate this, Vaughn.
Well, I appreciate you wanting to call me up and talk about him. He's a great man. As I said, I was very, very lucky to know him. And he's a great Canadian. He's part of our history. And, you know, you look at our history not to be trapped by the past or imprisoned by it. You look at it for the things you can value and learn from it, and then you build on it.
Yeah. Now, you're coming up to 40 years at the Sun next year. Are you still enjoying it?
Right. Oh, sure. You know, BC politics is a great gig. You know, we don't always have great governments, but there's always lots of great material to write about in BC politics. It's feel very lucky and very lucky to be based over in Victoria, and the paper's good to me, so on we go.
Maybe you'll let me talk to you about your own career one day.
Well, one of these days, sure.
I appreciate this, Vaughn. Thanks so much.
Thank you for asking me. Really appreciate it as well.
The Vancouver Sun's Vaughn Palmer on the line from Victoria in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.